Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool go to Manchester United and get giant killed by the Minnows. Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3 after extra time. We are brought to you by Greene King. It is always more than a game with Greene King, and we're pleased to be sponsored by them. The league season is entering the business end, and it is, emphatically. And Greene King sport venues are showing every single televised Liverpool fixture over that run. And there's 900 sport pubs across the UK. It doesn't matter where you are, you can get every single minute of the action. We will always say on the Anfield Wrap, football is a social activity. You want to do it with people. So if you can't get to the ground, get instead to a Greene King pub. Put something in your group chat and go from there. You can download the app, and there's competitions, there's content, and there's discounts whenever there's a game on. I have got Josh Williams, I've got Jake Nolan, I've got Sean O'Donnell. And Sean, Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3. It's been a while since a really good, solid fuck-off Liverpool. but yesterday, they brought that bit to the party. It's about as infuriated as it could possibly have been about Liverpool's least significant remaining game this season.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, it's a funny one. I was thinking about it, obviously, this morning and stuff, and I think the game actually plays out exactly how a lot of people thought it'd play out. They start really fast. They get a goal, which, you know, a few people had said, oh, they might score early with a bit of pressure, being at home, etc. And then our quality just shines through. And you see that we get 2-1 up quite quickly. The second half was a second half that, you know, we've been used to seeing when we win 4-5-0 there. That was what I was getting from the second half. And the infuriating thing is exactly what you've just said. We don't make it 3-4-0. We don't turn those great opportunities into... Because I think if we score one in that second half, we are scoring five. I think it was that type of game.
Yeah.
And that's why you're infuriated. I mean, I'd forgot that we went up an extra time. Because it just happened so quickly, the way they win it. It's like we go up an extra time, we're winning an extra time. I think that's the most infuriating thing for me on reflection. You shouldn't go up an extra time and then lose the game. Like that shouldn't happen. Not for this Liverpool team. So that's why it's infuriating. And yeah, it's just, I mean, I was thinking about the thing that you say quite often about football and miracles happening on a weekly basis. And, you know, I think to get that all in, part of the deal is that something goes against you at some point. And if it's gonna be yesterday, then so be it.
You're all with the punches, but it is, Josh, the first time they've genuinely done me head in this season. And to be fair, it's nearly Easter. Easter's early, but it's nearly Easter. So that we've got this far and it's the first time I've been absolutely livid with them. That is a strong show, and that is to praise them. But the flip side of it is you are just left scratching your head about three or four different phases of the game, not just one.
Yeah, really sure one to take, to be honest. I agree with you. I think Liverpool have been brilliant this season, we all know that, but this is one of them where you're just like, pfft. I mean, to take the lead twice against them, and we said last week, you know, I've said all season, to be honest, that they are not a good side.
They're rubbish.
They're absolutely a mess, mate. Some of their spaces that they left in the middle of the park was outrageous. I tweeted during the game, it felt like Liverpool were playing like a team from a different era.
Yeah.
You know, like with, like or an international team or something. Just like with massive.
They're so weird. They're such a weird team. Yeah. I wonder if this is almost what fed into the madness of it all. Why are they so weird?
I know they've got like an attacking bank and then a defensive bank, and there's nothing else in the middle. It's just a complete like mishmash of just. It's just nuts, but like, and that's another frustrating element of it, right? Like that chaos element. You would think that would play into Liverpool. Liverpool usually thrive in those kind of environments, and there was points in the game where we had like a 5-on-2 at one point.
5-on-2,
outrageous to the extent
where five.
It felt like too easy.
But then you didn't
score them. You didn't kill them.
Didn't create a chance. The 5-on-2, yeah. they didn't get a shot away on the 5-on-2.
Yeah.
Like if Onana had pulled off a great save or something after we'd opened them up, and you go, well, we had a 5-on-2, but he does that. They didn't create a chance. They didn't have a shot, Josh. And yeah, that was why they were doing me editing. I'm just going, firstly, just kill it in general because you're that dominant. Secondly, the spaces really begin to open even by their standards, so kill it then. Thirdly, the counters are then just absolutely enormous, so kill it then. Liverpool, why aren't you killing the game?
I know. And there was a point where I think it was relatively early in the game, like first half, where Szoboszlai receives a pass like through the lines, and he's got the entire middle third.
Got 60 yards.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. Like, how can that? How on earth do you lose to that team? Like, and concede 4 against them? It was just, yeah, really painful one, to be honest. Really painful.
It was a game of constant circumstance, Jake. And Liverpool were just not doing the right thing in any of the circumstances. And that also weirdly includes the period where I don't think Manchester United complete 4 passes for 25 minutes. And even in that period, Liverpool still weren't doing the right things, as far as I'm concerned.
Some going, that, isn't it?
That is some going.
At home. Yeah. Wow, okay. Yeah, no, I think you're completely right. I was thinking a lot about the circumstances. You know, the fact that it's probably our least important game, as you mentioned, the fact that it's their most important game. You know, I watched the highlights back this morning, the commentator makes a shout at 2-1 saying pressure will really start to mount on Ten Hag now if they don't come back on this. And it's quite right, isn't it? I think they kind of, no, that played into the hands. The fact that it was St. Patrick's Day, don't forget, it's 2 big days for Liverpool and Manchester. They would have been on the ale since 9 o'clock in the morning. And it did feel a bit of a big cup tie, and I think that is a thing, you know, if you, not to make excuses, but they are circumstances. I think they were very up for it, and you know, we'll go on to mention a few things about the fans and that, but it was a cup tie, I think, and I think for us it was just a case of tired legs, tired mind.
And tired minds as much as tired legs in the end.
And also, I know you're into sort of spreadsheets and preparation as much as me, Neil, and I was thinking about it on my way in, where it was... realistically, when did Liverpool start thinking about this game? Probably Saturday morning. Yeah. Genuinely, because, you know, the games that we've had and the sort of running that we've had, and he would have given them a day off Friday, and they would have got their ice baths and the massages. I think Jürgen might have gone and had a pint in the freshie. And then ultimately they got up Saturday morning and gone, all right then, Pep, mate, what are we going to do tomorrow? And I think it was literally just put the 11 fittest lads that he thinks are our best team on the pitch, and let's see if we can go and do them and make it a bit mad. And it didn't look like we'd prepped for a game.
On that, Sean, I do think, I want to be clear about this, I think Liverpool have been really, really good in this run. There's the big blip at Arsenal away, there's now this, but in the run as a whole, I think they've been really good, and I think they've got what they deserve. But I do think there's been moments in it where they have ridden the luck a tiny little bit. You know, let's be clear about this, Chelsea should score in the final for the 10 minutes before in normal time. They're on top, we're on the back foot, we're knackered, he brings the young players on at 87, there's still injury time to play. And the reason why extra time was so special was because of the previous 10 minutes when you thought, backs against the wall. I think that Liverpool have, you know, again, with all the praise in the world for them, they have been riding the luck a little bit, and sometimes your luck just runs out.
100%. It's what I said earlier around, you know, the football miracles on a weekly basis thing. I think you can't keep doing that all the time. I think if we would have scored in the last minutes of extra time yesterday, I would have said someone's winding me up, this is a film, this isn't real life. Do you know what I mean? Because it's just constant where we have got those last minute winners and it does go in your favour. And I think it's a reminder to all of us really that football does that. This does happen in football. I think going into it, you know, myself included, it was almost like it was a done deal, that we were just going to win at Old Trafford. We were going to turn up, we were going to roll them, and you know, it might have been 4-5-0. And whilst the game sort of did play out like that, it could have happened. It's a reminder that, you know, you go, it's still Old Trafford, it's still an FA, it's still an FA Cup tie. I can count on probably, you know, one hand where I've seen Liverpool win at Old Trafford in my lifetime, and you know, a lot of them have been recent, but still, it's still a thing. I think the first sort of 15 minutes when they were on top reminded me a lot of when United used to come to Anfield when they were the better side, and it was like, it doesn't matter who the form team is, it doesn't matter who's the top of the table and who's sort of mid-table or fighting for the European places, this is still a massive tie. And whilst I think back in those days we were a bit better at sort of getting a lead and keeping hold of it, it's still a thing, and I think that's probably for everyone going into it, you know what I mean?
Well, I think all season, watching them, Sean, having an eye on them perpetually in and around the sixth place they've made their own, the thing that they've done is they've hung in.
Yeah.
At all times. You know, in games where I think they've been rubbish and I've been watching the game, they hang in, you know, all the time. They're somehow just sort of keeping games alive. And I'm just thinking, but here's a crap. The opposition are having loads of shots. What's going on? But there is something there where, firstly, they're not all dreadful players, but they stay alive in games. And I think that's what we also saw.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a thing, because if you've done it before, you know that every opportunity that we don't convert, every chance that, or every opportunity we don't even turn into a chance, they're thinking in the back of their minds, we can get them, we can get them. And I think it's just, you know, they almost put us in a false sense of security by being so crap, because you're like, oh, it's all right, another chance will come, we'll get another chance. And again, it's just a reminder, we need to treat this as a wake-up call. Like, if you want to win all four, which is obviously, you know, highly, you know, unachievable, then you've got to just be ruthless. And I think that was the big thing that was missing yesterday.
In the end, then, the international break, Josh, looks nicely timed, I think. I think he could do with, I know some of them will be going away to play, but a little bit of a break, a little bit of a refresh, and then back. And the other thing that they've also managed to avoid is one more game, at the very least, in terms of being moved. I think finals are different coming at the end of the campaign and everyone's in the same boat. But they've got a little, just a teeny little bit of opportunity now to recharge.
Yeah, I mean, it's annoying that we've now got to sit on it for 2 weeks. That's a frustrating one. But
if you wish, it was a league game.
Yeah. Well, you'd like to think that this would almost shake them up for the league, you know, yeah, especially when we come back here at Old Trafford, because we'll get similar opportunities, I think, if not better, to be honest, considering it will flip a little bit in terms of less importance for United, more importance for us in terms of the result next time we face them at Old Trafford. So you'd like to think this will give us, if you're going to get some kind of punch in the face, some kind of warning between now and the end of the season, this was probably the game where it was going to hurt us the least in terms of outcomes at the end of the season. So obviously a few players looked and mentally, you know, probably tired and things like that, maybe get a little bit of a break there. But yeah, going into the kind of final stretch, we're still fighting for everything, still in a great place, and hopefully we can kind of recover from this and use it to kind of spare us on a little bit.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's a game of three phases, Jake, just to run through them very quickly. There's the early United danger, then there's from the Endo disallowed goal, arguably to about 80-ish, and then there's extra time, which is, I think, well, the end of the match and extra time, which is broadly chaos in there as well. United get some good opportunities in the first and third of those phases. The early United danger is a little bit predictable. I'd therefore like Liverpool to have looked like they predicted it a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. You know, we are the bigger team, which maybe we should have been a little bit more foot on throat. But I do have big sympathies for the reasons that I mentioned, you know, the lack of preparation, the fact we have played a lot of games, the fact that it is a derby, the fact they are up for it. Like Sean mentioned, going to Old Trafford is one thing, but as somebody who played football most of my life, I always look at it when I see it and go, fucking size of that. Like, you know, it's a bigger pitch than most that they play on, and so you're playing the occasion, you're playing sort of different sort of barometers, and if they're not coming off the traps, then ultimately it's a lot more of an harder day for them because the fans are on the back and this, that and the other. So sometimes you have got to play the occasion, but we should have known what was coming a bit more. You know, we've got an experienced team there. When I saw the team, I was like really happy with that. Probably our best 11 that we can pick at the moment, in my opinion. But it was difficult for multiple different reasons. But the thing that I'm most frustrated about to jump a phase and your three phases is when you get ahead, that's when you want to see it out. And we just didn't look like at any point that we'd set for that. Really, it was almost a bit like we'd gone out there expecting it to make a chaotic and almost like a 5-2 or a 5-1 would have been more a likely scoreline than just seeing out a 2-1 win and just having two banks of four and trying to hit them on the break. At no point did we look like that was ever in the game plan, or nobody was on the pitch sort of shouting, "We see this out for the next 10. You know, we'd slow it down, we killed the game. It was all very sort of end-to-end basketball-y, which we've seen so many great games under Klopp like that, and we've literally beat them 5-0 at their place with a game being like that. I always remember they started fast that day as well, and we soon put that to bed. But ultimately, you know, I'm disappointed, but if it was a league game, I'd be a lot more disappointed, to put it that way.
Couldn't agree more with that. It's in that early spell, Sean, they do really well down our right there left. They're getting a fair bit of joy. It's a lot of delayed one more runner stuff, little ball around the corner, played as much out of hope as expectation, but in the early phase, expectation was being met because they had the runner there. Again, I think that Liverpool, they take a little bit of time to get used to that, and it's almost as much that they let United punch themselves out as it is that they actually sort of genuinely get a grip with the area.
Yeah, it always seems to be that side at Old Trafford, doesn't it? Like, every time we play them, like, that side always seems to be the one where they break through or they get a chance or they get a goal from. And I think...
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it's like a light bulb moment. Yeah, honestly, it really is. Yeah.
It always, I was thinking it yesterday. Yeah. I think it's probably why he goes with Gomez ahead of Bradley, isn't it? Because he knows that, you know, that's where the danger is. So... It's. I mean, United got the score again in that phase. Yeah. There's a good save from Kelleher, isn't there? Where you're like, ooh, like that could have, you know, turned quite ugly. And obviously, the end result is ugly. But I think it's such a strange because it isn't so many phases. The one takeaway I got from it was we soaked up the pressure well. Yes, they scored, but then when we flip it, it was almost like Gakpo's getting a lot of stick, isn't he, for his second half performances and decision making. I felt like the first half was actually made for someone more like a Gakpo than a Nunes, because we weren't getting many balls in behind. It was very much that big bit of space in front of their back four, where if you had someone like Firmino was the player I was thinking in my head. Imagine he was playing there, he just drops in, he gets the ball, all of a sudden, you know, we've created something. I feel like it was almost got it the other way around. If Gakpo would have been there in the first half to drop in and do what he does best there, and then the second half, and it is a bit more like basketball, Nunes comes on with his fresh legs and breaks free, and he's not tired from sort of running himself out in the first half. I think that might have suited us well, and might maybe something that they think about for the league game. But it's just, it's just frustrating. It really is.
To Sean's point, I was actually with Rob Gutman the night before the game, and I said I wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't start. If he picks a very similar team to the City team, he doesn't start Robertson and Salah, and he has the idea of, you can change your forwards on 60. And I do wonder a little bit around that, Josh, whether or not, you know, in hindsight today, he's looking at it thinking, the smart move might have been to be able to make at least three sub-second half that make us stronger. Off the basis of the fact that if they're going to start a certain way, we do three sub-second half that kick us on one way or another. And, you know, that a lot of this now is, let's be clear, if Liverpool go and make it 3-1, we're not having this chat in the period when they're on top. Exactly, we're not having this chat. And that's always the loss of a football manager. But I do think that there is a little bit of a, you know, with him, he's used the squad so brilliantly this season. He's used the sub so brilliantly this season. You are left just a little bit of, could he have done something a little bit different yesterday in a way that you very rarely are?
Yeah, I mean, this is the benefit of hindsight, really, isn't it? You know, I do think, you know, if we get to a point where we start to take some of our chances, it could play out five, you know, we could score five, but we just didn't. But when Nunes comes off, and at the point that he comes off, he kind of has to come off, like he is blowing, like I think Gakpo makes us worse. And
Salah, you mean? Because Nunes doesn't come off.
Oh, sorry, yes, Salah. Yes, I thought Salah was off it, like, throughout the course of the game, to be honest, in terms of like his link-up play and things like that, just passing it a little bit too far for the man or behind the man or something like that. I thought Gakpo didn't particularly play into the transition kind of game that it was at that time, the basketball game. It's easy to say this sort of thing, though. Like, I think Klopp got it spot on at the end of the game when he was analysing it. It was just kind of his way of saying, it's on the players, this one. Like, it's not on me, this, mate. Like, you know what I mean? He kind of said, like, we didn't finish the chances, we didn't kill the game, and he can't put the ball in the net. As good as he is, he can't actually finish a chance, Jürgen Klopp. So it's one of them where it's just, the players had an off day all over. I felt everyone was really wasteful in comparison to the usual standards.
The odd thing about it is, and I genuinely, again, this is not hindsight, at the point where they made it two, I was desperate for them to make it three. Like, and you can go, well, it was quite, I was like, no. We can score another goal here in 90 seconds. There's genuinely time to go and make this 3-1 there and then. Because I think that from the Endo disallowed goal, and I think it took a bit of time for what passed for the commentary to sort of keep up with what was happening on the pitch just before the Endo goal, I'm looking at them going, they're shot here. They are absolutely knackered. And we've got the run of the place.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in that period there, the Endo goal, he's just offside Salah. And it's not even an offside where he's gained a massive advantage from it either. It's not, the goal doesn't happen because of the offside, if you see what I mean. The other two then sort of play out. And it genuinely just looks as though we can score at will.
Well, in the second half, when we've obviously got the lead, there was a period between like maybe the 50th minute or something and then up to them scoring their second goal, the equaliser, where it was just a complete free-for-all. There was chances after chances after chances, space all over the park and that. And when the game's like that, people have touched on, obviously, since the whole game management elements of it, and I completely get it, but when it's like that, as a player on a pitch, it must surely be difficult to not lick your lips and say, sound, we'll have a go at this, because this is our game, transition game, Jürgen Klopp. You know, we will kill you at this sort of thing. Usually we would. But we just didn't, and it ended up playing into their hands rather than ours. But when the game was like that, we almost kind of descended to their level in a way, in a weird sort of way. Like, I felt Liverpool lost the game as opposed to Man United winning it. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, frustrating moment.
In that spell, Jake, when they are on top, as I said, there's a couple of counters that they managed to get, but they also just literally have the ball. They also just have the ball and move them and move them and move them. That, it felt like that just almost became a bit self-perpetuating. If you know, and I don't think this is any ground rope or dope plan by Manchester United, but it was like that. Where to Josh's point, if you go back to the manager when he first comes in, he says, you know, at times we're going to play teams that are better than us, and we're going to drag them down to our level and kill them, which everyone always loved as a quote. We sank to Manchester United's level, but we also weirdly did it whilst dominating possession. Because this is one of the reasons why the game's so odd. We've got complete control of the ball, but I don't think it's a plan to play into their hands. We're just blunting ourselves by virtue of the fact that we're almost liking the fact that we've got so much control of the ball that we can just knock it around like this, and we're taking time out and all of that, and we're almost enjoying that a bit. If I say enjoying it a bit too much, you know what I mean? Like, ultimately, the players get themselves into this rut of the way we're going to see this out is we're going to keep it 2-1 for ages, then it's going to open up, we're going to make it 3, and then it's going to be all over by the shouting, and we'll have gone to Old Trafford and dominated the second half. And I think they play the way in to that mindset rather than the idea of, why don't we just make it 3 now, boys?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, as you thought, and then I've got this sort of vivid memory of a really good coach saying to me back in the day, don't get bored of staying in good habits, and I do feel like there was a little bit of that. It was a bit more like, it was almost so easy, we were taking the wrong decision, you know, when it's that 5-on-2, we probably play the hardest ball, for example, and there is an element of just not managing the game. But like I said, I do feel like a lot of that will come down to a little bit of football arrogance, a little bit, we're well better than these. We should be able to see these off, like Josh has said. And then also just a lack of preparation. You know, if we'd have had a little bit more of a game plan, we would have done that. But I do, to give them a little bit of credit, because they are shite, and you know, that's the elephant in the room is they are shite, but to give them a little bit of credit and to give Ten Hag, through gritted teeth, a tiny bit of credit. Since we walloped them last season, he's done a number on us twice. You know, the Anfield game, he killed that game for us. And then yesterday kind of, I think he managed the game quite well going into the extra time. In the end, it was clear what they were trying to do and hit us on the break and lead us into a false sense of security, and he did do that. But we, you know, ultimately, I think Liverpool will be waking up today, going in for the nice massages and ice bath, going, how the fuck did we not win that, boys? Because they are absolutely woeful.
Extra time becomes broadly chaos, Sean. There's a couple of bits, really, you know. I don't understand why we're playing out at 3-2 in the way in which we are before you even get to Nunez. I don't know what Nunez is, A, doing there, but also B, then doing when he is there. I don't know what's going through his head. I think what part of what's going through his head is the idea of, what we do here is we just look after the ball. Yeah. But there's something else, which is that Fernandes can barely walk and he's gone to play centre-half. Like, you know, if there's anything I want there, I'm all for Darwin ending up in the play.
That was mad, that looks.
But yeah, I just like Darwin to go up there, stand on Fernandes, and someone hit the ball at him and go, well, go on then, what are you going to do? Even though he was himself absolutely goosed. Nunez at that point, but it is in those phases you are just a bit like Liverpool, just be a bit more sensible, be a bit more, and I don't like using this word in a football context, I think it gets actually used in the wrong way, but I do mean it in the way it tends to be used here, just be a bit more pragmatic.
Yeah, and to be honest, extra time is the most frustrating thing for me, because we do that.
Well, I like that we're all in different places, so what bit pisses us off the most?
Well, we do the hard thing. It's like I said before, I literally, like, you forget we scored in extra time. If you score in extra time, you take the lead in extra time, you don't get beat in extra time. You might go to pens, but don't get beat in extra time. And I feel like, you know, thinking of, like, in-game management and all this sort of thing that we've come to talk about, it's just common sense. It's like, stop being stupid, use your brains. Carragher was talking about the extra time in the League Cup final. He says, oh, no team wants to get beat, they just think about, like, getting spent. It looked like we wanted to get beat. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's where I'm at with it. I'm just like, oh my god, how can you be so stupid? And that's what I felt like that extra time performance was like. It was just it was frustrating. I mean, Just to roll it back a little bit in terms of the phase where we're on top in the second half, I think other than Salah, like the midfield and attack, none of them have been to Old Trafford and won. Like we beat them at Anfield, obviously with the, you know, the 7-0, but they haven't got that lived experience of these stakes are quite high. You need to just be ruthless. I think if you were to take it back to some of the more experienced players we've had under Klopp, and I don't want to be one of them. Oh, if we had Mane, Firmino, etc. But even someone like a James Milner, like he understands the situation that he's in, and I felt that inexperience was something that I've come away from yesterday thinking like we are still on a bit of a journey with
for
this
the first
team.
Time as well. I think it is almost for the first. Like you've looked at them and you've been delighted with the fact that they felt precocious, they felt ahead of the journey. But yesterday, no, it was for the first time. It's interesting you mentioned Milner there. You know, for the first time, I was pining in ages. I was pining for a couple of the older chaps.
I was thinking of like a Thiago personally, or like maybe a Wijnaldum. You know, them players who are not in a rush and will just give you a bit of control and you know, make you realise basically you have a lead. But it goes back to that descending into what United were trying to achieve. Like United did to us what we tend to do to Guardiola City in terms of just making the game chaotic. You play like us rather than we try and play like you and you just beat us. You get what I mean? So if you turn a match into just utter chaos, the better team struggles to establish that level of control that they have in every week to win games, and you
but they had
just
that control for half an hour of the second half. That's why I find this bit difficult. Half an hour they had it,
and he didn't kill him yet. Yeah,
the last goal is what I don't want to do is do loads and loads of you know, backseat coaching around it, Josh, because the manager's brilliant. Everyone knows the jobs. Everyone knows where they are. But there was an interview that Gomez gave last season where he talked about, because it was when people beginning to talk about the no goal thing for the first time 12 months ago, and he talked about, and someone said, do you have a lot of shots when the ball breaks out from a corner? And he says, yeah, that's under instruction. And I think the interview was like, why? And he said, because the instruction is to end the attack. And that's what Endo and Elliot just fail miserably to do. Like, Endo, I think, should just take charge of the situation. I think Elliot's trying to be progressive. Virgil's going to stay up. We're all still thinking last-minute dramatic glorious winner at Old Trafford. That's the myth. But there's just a strong argument that Endo just kicks it in the general direction of the goal, don't get me wrong. And if it flies in like Kovacic did for Chelsea against us going back a couple of seasons ago, then great, we're all made up. But the point is it's in the attack territory that now, boys. I'm not that concerned. Like, I don't like that there's only one back, but that's because I'm inherently sort of nervy about these things. I think if someone just puts the foot through it, it doesn't matter how many are back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was another one of them situations, to be honest, where, like, It's easy for me to say here, sat in an air-conditioned podcast room, but just relax. But it summed up the kind of hurried nature of the way things played out, that they just almost panicked in the moment. You know, both kind of clashed almost, and we end up conceding a counter-attack with literally the last kick of the game. And I think that the last player back is Bradley, is he?
Yeah.
And
I think he does all right.
I think he does all right, but it's. I mean, it'd be better if it was someone like a Virgil or something like that, you know what I mean? But it wasn't.
Because Virgil thinks he's scoring the winner.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That's again, though, that sums up like the.
I thought he took him wide. I thought his body shape was good.
I thought just as much as he can under the circumstances, much as he can, I think.
Yeah, it's still a scenario you want to avoid if you can.
No, it is. No argument with the facts for me on that one. Jake, because of all the phases, it becomes a little bit difficult, I think, to have a genuine sort of assessment of individual performances, because it is such a weird game. They are such an odd team to come up against. So, so weird. I thought Robertson played well. I think if you've actually got a criticism of Robertson, is that he probably should score with the positions he continually finds himself in. But I thought that Robertson and Diaz first half especially were a big part of Liverpool being able to wrest back control of the game and then go on and dominate.
Yeah, I think the good thing about the likes of Bradley showing form, showing that he's at the level, and Joe Gomez, for me, having such a brilliant season, you know. Touch wood, he stays fit. But he's been as good as anyone in those full-back positions for me all season. But the good thing about it is now Robertson has real sort of competition. I don't think he's had that. So I think he's almost playing like he's got something to prove. And I think that's no bad thing in a sort of a team that wants to win titles. And I think you could see that for the first time. You've seen some fans kind of question when he's picked. Ooh, wouldn't they be picking Robertson there? Dav Gomez there? Or that Bradley or whatever? You can start to see he's slowly but surely starting to get back to his best, and I think he's a leader, Andy Robertson. And in those games at Old Trafford, like we spoke about, you know, we've mentioned not having the likes of Milner, not having the likes of certain players. He's the ones that would have been guiding us through, and there's no coincidence that we don't look as good when he's not there. But I still, you know, as we're talking there, I'm still can't quite get my head around the fact that we just didn't manage that game. And it's funny that we've mentioned certain scenarios. We've all mentioned that with a bit of frustration. But my thing is a bit like, if we just killed the game, we'd have been fucking sound. And there's loads of other games. You know, even last week against City, as much as we've came off and we've sort of outplayed them and this, that, and the other, there was a part of me last week that thought, if we'd have been a bit more like the traditional Liverpool and let them hit us and then hit them, I actually think we'd have had a better chance of winning the game. I really do. So it's interesting to see. There is this arrogance, there is this fluidity to our Liverpool play, and they're going out there, they're expressing themselves. But I half want them to be just a gang of our asses now a bit as well.
It's fair, and remember the moments to do that. McAllister, I thought, first 20 was really, really off it, and then I thought he was excellent for the remainder, Sean.
Yep, agreed. I think he's been shining light of certainly the most recent part of the season, and like for me, get McAllister in the game and Liverpool will play well, and I think you've seen that yesterday. You know, he did struggle to sort of get scripts of it. Obviously he's played there at Brighton before, but it's the first time he's playing with Liverpool. I think it is a different ball game. I think that you know, the atmosphere might have just hit him a little bit. You know, I don't think we can exclude Liverpool players from being affected by opposition atmospheres. And I think, you know, you've seen that throughout the whole team, but maybe he's one where he just grew into the game a little bit and grew in confidence. I think when he realised that the space he had and the space that was in front of him and the rest of the players, I think it was almost like a light bulb in McAllister. And as I say, once you get him playing, Liverpool just look like a better team.
Yeah, I thought he started quite... I thought he was just late. Just late to a lot of challenges, and you can put that down to maybe the chaotic way in which United started the game. I think that basketball side of things is I don't think that is ever going to benefit McAllister, to be honest. I don't think he's that kind of, you know, vertical box-to-box runner or anything like that. You can see it written all over his face when he's blowing, like, because he turns like a weird pink colour, doesn't he?
It's a ginger gene, that, mate. I know that well.
But yeah, I thought he could go into the game and ends up kind of establishing himself as the main midfield force, you know, and he's done that consistently over the course of the past couple of weeks. I think he's been like the standout Liverpool player for me in terms of stepping up and grabbing proceedings almost and dictating what's going on. So Yeah, I mean, I think he's due a bad 20 minutes, to be fair to him, isn't he?
Yeah, he is indeed. He is indeed, but he kicks on from there. Of the forwards, I thought Diaz was the pick. Jake, I thought he, you know, played ever so well. Mentioned Salah didn't look quite where you want him to be. Nunez is a really weird game where for 15-20 minutes, from 30 to about 50, he's everything, and in all other bits he's doing your head in.
Story of Darwin's life.
Just honestly, he's the fulcrum of everything. Diaz was, I thought, constant, threatening. I think the partnership with Robertson helped as well. I think that was one of the things. The two of them, it worked. And I think I've been waiting for it's ironic, it's in a game where we don't win, but I've been waiting to see a little bit more of that partnership developing, and I thought that yesterday you had a big bowl of it.
Yeah, you did. I've been impressed with Diaz for many weeks now. I think he's been absolutely excellent, getting better and better each week, and he's so important to this team because I think he gets the ball up the pitch, he looks after it so well, and the only thing he's really missing from his game is just bagging them goals, isn't he, and being a little bit more of a natural finisher. That's all you're dying to see, because, you know, I don't want to harp back too much, but, you know, traditionally we've had Salah, Firmino and Mane chipping in with plenty of goals. We still are missing those goals a little bit, and if he could chip in a little bit more, I think he'd be as good as any winger in the Premier League ultimately. And quite rightly, yeah, it was really nice. There was nice balance to him cutting inside and Robertson going on the outside yesterday, and we're starting to see a good sort of partnership there. But like we said, we just didn't take our chances ultimately, did we?
It's with Diaz, Sean. I think it's good he keeps putting these performances in back to back. I think the other thing that he's showing as well is, you know, he's absolutely given everything. The legs are falling off him at times. If anything, you know, you could even make a bit of an argument he needs to protect himself a little bit more so that he's running stronger late in games, because it's just constant with him how much he shows.
Yeah, he's relentless, isn't he? I think that's the way it's when you think about Diaz. I think Jake summed it up quite well there in terms of, like, you would like to see some more goals from him, but I think what you do get from him when he's on the pitch, like, the ball sticks with him. So, like, I think if you are in a period like we were for the first half yesterday, where you might not be, you know, your back's against the walls a little bit, you know Diaz is your out ball. And, yeah. I found that he was our way out quite a bit in that period yesterday and helped us sort of build a bit of momentum again, because he can get the ball and he can just go on a run and take on two lads, and all of a sudden he's won a corner. Do you know what I mean? And it just gets you up the pitch. So I thought he was great for that, to be fair, yesterday. Yeah, but, you know, the goal thing is
I think if you're asked, like, did the pool now with the right backs of the Premier League, who's the hardest game, I think he'd be right up there, top two or three, 100%, because I don't think, and he's got that sort of South American tenacity as well, but he's not letting anything drop. Even if he loses the ball, he snaps to get it back, where you see loads of sort of players in that position throw their arms up and walk. But you just, yeah, if he just starts getting those goals, I think we've got a world beater.
Yeah, yeah. I feel tired watching him, to be honest. When I watch him, mate, the ground he covers, and he'll go on this long, marauding run, and you expect his next action, once the ball's gone out of play, to be like, you know, he'll fall to his knees or something like that, or he'll, like, take a minute, but he just runs back, just gets back into position and that, and he is relentless, like. But I think the finishing side of things, I actually don't know if it's the finishing part. It feels more to me that when he enters the box, he's trying to manipulate the perfect shot. Like, he's trying to get the perfect opening rather than having a scruffy one. Sometimes, I mean, especially in the penalty box, mate, because of how crowded there is, you're getting two touches max before you need to release the ball, whether you're releasing the ball for a pass or a shot or what. But he's trying to take on men and trying to send men the wrong way in the box and stuff like that, and you end up, like, foot with four men on you and your shot gets blocked. I think if he can just be a bit more instinctive, almost just shoot really quickly, basically, I think he'd hit the targets a lot more, and, you know, his shots would be a little bit cleaner.
There's a little thing as well, though, at times. First and foremost, I think part of the reason why he firstly thinks he can beat the person who's in front of him.
Mm.
He backs himself, so I take your point, but he thinks, well, I can beat him, mate. I'm going to do it, mate. So don't you worry about me. So there's an element to that, but I think it's actually something else, which is something for him to think about and think about with the manager and arguably with the next manager as well. I think there's a little problem, which is he's often getting to the box when he's already covered 40 yards. You think about a lot of what Salah does around the penalty area. Salah tends to get the ball within 5-10 yards of the area, often already in line with the area and coming in sideways. Diaz is moving you 40 yards up the pitch, but he's so good at it, he's now in the penalty area, but he's now done 45 yards of running. Yeah. And I think that's as much you with him at times, a little bit of the problem. That's where I've got a bit of sympathy for him now when I'm watching it, because I'm like, I think you've seen him finish well when he arrives onto things. When he arrives onto it, it's his first touch or second touch to finish. I think you've seen that he can finish those ones. I think the problem he's ended up with is, I've had the ball here for 15 seconds, I've had two hanging off me back, I've run 45 yards, and now, you know, Jake Nolan expects me to get a great shot away.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And he scored a fair few belters as well. So he's got like that, the technique behind the striking of the ball. And as you say, he is that outlet for us, so he's covering a lot of ground, which, you know, fair play to him, like, because he's, as you say, in terms of the players he's playing with, that's not always happening. But yeah, it's just for me that searching for that really clean, open shot sometimes will end up working against you, and then the opposite will happen. And if you decide a bit quicker, sometimes the shot will be a little bit scruffier, and it might just be a bit more like going through the legs of a man or something, but you'll still get your shot away. Like, do you remember the Inzaghi thing that I mentioned to you? On the post-match pint, you know, Ancelotti said to Calvert-Lewin, basically, when he first came in, Inzaghi was a master at this. Basically, if you can, shoot with your first touch, if not your second touch. And beyond that, you're in the box, you're not going to get an opportunity. The next opportunity is going to be a pass. You're going to be passing or crossing it. Beyond that, you're not going to be shooting. So I think if Diaz, if you give him like a two-touch limit in the box, I think he'd benefit from it, you know, really do like a little training exercise or something like that. But
it's interesting.
I do get it though.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because it was just as we were talking, and I was almost thinking, well, what does a Luis Diaz goal look like? And a lot of his goals have come from a central area, or the Chelsea one where he arrives at the back post from the right-hand side. Yep. I think he plays off the right-hand side the second half. Or the one where he, you know, the edge of the box where he cuts in and then curls it in, sort of Coutinho-esque almost.
But I don't think you see that one anywhere near as much as we all A, think we do, and B, he thinks you see. No, I don't think you see that one that much anymore. That's what he was doing at Porto. I don't think you see that here.
Yeah, and he was playing in central area at Porto as well, which was interesting to pick up. But I completely agree. So that idea that he just needs to be arriving at the back post a little bit more, really, isn't one-touch finish.
I think there's an argument to say, other than Salah, and maybe even Salah at times, you know, but they're all guilty of that. They're all guilty of trying to find the perfect goal.
Jota's not.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. In the words of Bill Shankly, if he's injured, you know, he doesn't exist.
By the way, if Jota plays yesterday, yeah. By the way, we are in a different conversation. Because at some point he just says, what are we doing here? Give me the ball, I'll run past him and score.
Exactly, yeah. Sometimes you just need that scruff on the pitch. It was just a bit like, listen, just put the ball in the net, forget the fancy stuff, do the business end stuff. Straight down the line and just deliver.
All right then, we'll come back to a little bit more. I thought the use/non-use of the young players was interesting. We'll come back around into that in a minute or two. But John Gibbons went to Zoe's place to find out everything that they're up to, all the wonderful work that they do, and here is that now.
It's John Gibbons from the Anfield Wrap, and we're here at Zoe's Place, an incredible charity and hospice in Liverpool that provides care and respite for babies and very young children up to 5 and support for their families too. They need your help at the moment. They're losing this home and they want to move into a fantastic new space, but they need your support to do that. So we're going to go inside to find out more about the amazing work that they do and how you can help.
Robin, she's got spina bifida. So she's got no feeling from the waist down, but that doesn't stop her from doing anything. She's dead strong, aren't you? Are you a strong girl? Yeah? And she's a little character. She's dead happy all the time, even when she's sick. She's always smiling. And she's always smiling when she comes to Zoe's as well. Like, she just loves being here. And all the staff are amazing with her. I had my scan. They said there was a protrusion on her spine. So then we went to the women's and that, and they confirmed that she had have spina bifida, but they didn't know how bad it would be until she was born. But she's also got kyphosis of her spine, which she's got a lump, her spine grew out. So that's why she's got no feeling from the waist down. She's got a shunt as well, so she's had to have a few revisions because that's failed. So she's been through quite a lot. And then she's tube fed because she doesn't eat much and she wasn't gaining weight, so they had to put a tube in last year. So we're just waiting for a peg now to go in her stomach to feed her through that. And Robin has to be catheted as well, every 3 hours. So that was a big part of it, because like the nurses are here as well, so I trust them to do that side of it as well. She's just a little warrior. That's what we call her, little warrior, don't we? Hey.
We offer one-to-one specialised care for the children. We have children who are completely mobile, some who aren't mobile, some that have specialised equipment. They've got all kinds of machines they have to take with them, oxygen, all kinds of medications. We do have some children who are at that severe end, and we're just trying to, you know, be involved in making their journey as happy as we can. You know, we just want to help.
Zoe's Place is reliant entirely on donations from the general public, and we wouldn't exist and we wouldn't be able to continue to provide the services that we do without the generosity of local people and organisations and businesses. We need to raise over £1.5 million a year just to keep the hospice going and to continue providing the care that we do.
But the reason we're here is because you need people to step up even more over the next 12 months or so, because you're losing this home. You are planning to move to a fantastic new purpose-built centre, which will be brilliant, but it needs paying for, and we need people's help.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2 years' time, in our 30th year, our lease comes to an end here. This is really exciting for us as a hospice. It's also really scary because we need to raise £3.5 million. We've raised £1.2 million already, which is amazing. So we've got just over £2 million left to raise. But we're so confident that with the support of local people and businesses and organisations that we're definitely going
to
do it.
And you've been going for close to 30 years, but what we want is Zoe's Place going for another 30 years, 30 years after that, and being part of this city, because the care that you guys provide is unique. It's not possible to get that often sort of anywhere else, and it's so important to these families we've met today.
Absolutely. Zoe's Place in Liverpool is just incredible. It is a wonderful place for families and babies to come for respite and support and care.
What's come across to me today when I've met some of these families is that if you guys didn't exist, then the care wouldn't be there.
No, and you know, the thought of that breaks my heart. I think what we do is so special, and the parents, they tell us all the time how much they rely on us. And I don't think you realise how much until you're actually sitting down and speak to them. You know, we have parents who just say, we just can sleep, we can have a bath, you know, just little things like that. And I just think, if we didn't exist, who would they go to?
When we found Zoe's Place last year, it was just like a lifesaver. Like, I just felt like home as soon as I walked in. I just felt, because she's a safe environment, because I don't trust many people with her, because of the needs that she's got, you struggle to like give yourself a break. And it was even hard leaving at first when to do an overnight stay, because I was panicking. And then Kelly, one of the nurses, was like, she'll be fine, do it. So I did, and it was the best thing like ever. And she does two nights together each month, and it's just amazing, like, for her. She loves it. She gets to do all the play, all the sensory, everything what keeps her stimulated, really. And then that gives me time with me other kids.
Since I've started, and you know, I've seen the parents, and when they first come in, you can see they're on edge constantly, and then you work with them for the whole journey and getting them settled in and stuff like that, and they're like different people now. It's just the most rewarding thing, it really is.
The nurses and staff just love the kids. Like, you can see the nature inside to it, and it's just amazing. Just, I love it.
So you've seen the incredible work that Zoe's Place do. You can see what it means to families here in Liverpool, and we all need to come together to support them right now when they need it most to find this new home. So if anything that you can't afford to give, I know they'd appreciate it so much. There's a link in the description. If you can support them, it means so much.
Great stuff from John. If you go to theanfieldrap.com/donate, that is where you can donate to Zoe's Place. So theanfieldrap.com/donate for that. John did the half marathon yesterday, as did Jake. How'd you get on?
Yeah, I could have done better, mate. I kind of
bit of self-recrimination, yeah.
Yeah, I was doing it ever so well, and then I went to Berlin a couple of weeks ago on training, and kind of fell off a cliff a little bit, and then got to Friday and just gone and thought, fuck it, I was in Lions, I haven't had about 8 pints. But I got it done. And yeah, raised a little bit of money for the Women's Hospital, so that's what counts.
Excellent stuff. John did it for Zoe's Place, Jake for Women's Hospital. You'll be able to find it on the relevant socials if you want to be part of that. Just want to very, very briefly, because I don't think it's worthy of a conversation, because not least it dignifies it, and what are we all meant to say, mention the chanting that came over both on television and in the ground. For me, you know, been doing this long enough now, been going to football matches long enough now, it's obviously deeply unpleasant. I think the people who are in the ground when it's happening, I think there's a lot of people who will say afterwards, well, it wasn't me. Listen, I've been in grounds when I've heard Liverpool supporters start to chant some quite unsavoury stuff. What you've got to do is stop it from being the majority of the noise. And I think that's the key part of this, which is missing. It doesn't matter whether it's the majority of the people. You're never going to be able to work that out. The problem at the minute and yesterday at Old Trafford was that it was the majority of the noise, and that's the thing that needs to be addressed by their football club, by the relevant bodies. But let's be clear about this: you can't trust any institutions in Britain, and even if you could trust institutions in Britain, it's limited what they can do. People have got to self-police, and it's down to the individuals in question, it's down to the supporter base in question. So if you know any United supporters, maybe it's a nice time to reach out and say, you know what you need to do is you need it to be something else. And by all means, the thing that United supporters sing that winds me up the most, I want to be crystal clear, and clip this and send it to your United mates if you want, 20 times, Man United pisses me off. That really pisses me off. The other stuff just makes me think, why are you being a gang of bellends? And the two quite different things. You know, I'd much rather, I think it is much better being pissed off in a sporting sense than just thinking to yourself, what on earth is this? This is not reflective of the city of Manchester, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, last thing as well is we're on tour, and we go to a number of places at the Anfield Rap, theanfieldrap.com/ I think it's tour, is it? I can't remember now. I should know this. I've said it so many times. Anyway, you'll find it through all of our social media sort of bits and pieces. We're in New York on the Wednesday, Boston on the Thursday. Boston, buy some fucking tickets. the late buyers, the late buyers last time, yeah. You've done this. Yep. Late buyers are the worst, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. They do your head in.
They do your head in.
No good for your P&L, Neil.
They are no, they're just no good for your long-term planning. Yeah. So Boston, buy some tickets if you don't mind. Then Toronto on Friday, I think that's sold out. Well done, Toronto. Pat on the back for you in a civic sense. I'll speak to the mayor when we get there. Then on the Saturday night, Detroit. I think there's a few left for Detroit, not many. Sunday night, Wilmington, which is in Delaware. I think there's a couple left for that. Washington is sold out on the Monday, but I'll say it for good order. Quadruples don't happen, Josh. They don't happen for good reason, because one thing, one day goes wrong and you've got to go from there. What struck me a little bit was he's trusted a lot of young footballers as part of what brought us to this point in the party. And I think yesterday he has a little look and decides not to for the first time. I think it's the first time this season when I've, because I've been, you know, pleasantly surprised, A, by how much he's trusted young players, and B, then what they've given him in return. Yesterday, so I don't want to act as though, you know, as I say, I've been pleasantly surprised in the past. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I think there is a bit of an argument that there's a couple finishing that game who you could maybe do without. There's a couple on the bench who I thought you might just see. He's got the additional sub in extra time. You get given one more sub to play with, one more chance to break the game. He doesn't use it. Why do you think that is?
It's difficult to say. I think I would probably guess that it's just an element of protection in there, because it's Old Trafford. It's I think we've already established the pitch is massive, feels massive anyway. If it's like a proper man's stadium, to be honest, it's the two biggest teams in the country facing off on a, you know, a televised game and all that stuff, and stakes are really, really high. It was like 2-3 at one point, so there's probably just elements of that in there. Whereas I think in the Chelsea game, the Carabao Cup final, that felt like we A, had no choice, and B,
so I think that's the interesting part.
Yeah,
there's no choice. There was a point where there was no choice.
Yeah,
and yesterday there was choice. But I think, and it just went, not quite.
Yeah, I think another one with that though, with the Chelsea game, is they all come on together. So it's like a unit almost. Like these are the kids that we're introducing all at once. That they are part of the same group almost. Whereas at Old Trafford, it didn't play out that way really. So I think they were the elements that kind of played into it for me. I'm not sure. What minute did we see Bobby Clark?
Was
that extra time?
Yeah, it's an extra time.
Yeah.
I think it's about 1:10.
Yeah, well, at that point, you know, and Nunes, for example, as well. Nunes played that the entire game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, covered a lot. I'm not surprised his hamstring was hurting at the end of the game, by the sounds of it. But yeah, I think I would put it down to that. I don't think it's I think it's a protection thing for me.
I think he's thinking of penalties as the game wears on. I think that the difference at Wembley was like a home game, wasn't it? If you think about the atmosphere, and you think atmosphere can carry young players as we see it did. I think yesterday it probably goes back to protection. Not that he's been backed into score, but if you're a young player and you miss a penalty at Old Trafford, that can have a bad effect, whether you've got an older head. That's just sort of my take on it.
Yeah, you mentioned circumstance at the top of the show, and I think there's tons of that. It's not, if we were playing Man United on a different day, that wasn't, I've mentioned it before, Paddy's day, quarterfinal of the Cup, game before an international break as well. He's probably thinking, I can get a little bit more juice out of these lads. Yeah. Then we haven't got to worry about a game on Tuesday night or Wednesday night or whatever. I think there's tons and tons and tons of those things. And also, the thing about the Chelsea thing, it was kind of battered at us as a little bit of it's not that good, and which is a load of shit, by the way. But they were a young side as well, which I kind of feel like it helps a little bit to go, don't mind throwing the kids on here because they're a bit of a young side. Whereas Man United, for all the flaws, most of them are hairy-ass men who've played Champions League finals about 10 years ago. Even the keeper played last season, things like that, didn't he? So I think there's a lot of that. And I think he's just backing on the lads that he's picked. You think about the team that he's picked there. It's his most experienced 11 that he could probably pick, isn't it? There's lads to get him over the line. And if he doesn't get over the line, we're out the pot and we worry about the other three.
I think we worry about the other three. I think, let's be clear about this. There's a universe where that game goes a certain way. Yesterday, I'll come back to that on Jake. Yesterday they go to Old Trafford. United go 1-0 up. Liverpool don't make it. 2-1 before half time, they're the better side, but they miss, hit the post, and Onana makes a great save, get into the second half, United hit them on the break, go 2, Liverpool get one back. We've seen that, we've literally lived that reality before. I think that what adds to it all is the 4-3, the extra time, the element of drama, late equaliser, going ahead in extra time, late equaliser, very late winner. No, but that's why it does make it feel different. The universe where you just sort of, you have a 2-1, where it just happens to you, I think is also as plausible as the one that we're talking about where, Liverpool win 4-1, if you see what I mean, in that sort of circumstance. You'd end up in this sort of crazy world. But I think the key thing is, you shrug your shoulders and you focus on the other two. You've got one in the bank already. I'm always of the view it's great to win a domestic cup, but I don't think you need to win two of them. and that makes you sound unbelievably spoiled, but it's the truth of the matter. You'd rather see genuine energy being able to put into a remaining league campaign and European campaign.
Yeah, I've worried all season, to be honest with you. It's not to be glass half full for a second, to be miserable bastard in the corner, but I just don't think we've had the squads to win a quadruple, because who has? And ultimately even to
well, no one's done it.
Exactly. And if even to win a treble, it's gotta be something special. But if anyone can do it, it's this Liverpool team. But it is one less thing to worry about. As much as I would have loved another occasion, much as I'd love to beat them, much as would have loved to dream a little bit more, I think ultimately the one we all want is the Premier League, isn't it? And there's something special about Liverpool and European Cup competitions with Dublin on the horizon and all that. They're the two that we should really attack. And I think ultimately when he's trying to pick the players back up after a couple of weeks away, I think that's what he's saying to them in front of a nice PowerPoint.
He's got a bit of work to do. For me, Sean, well, the club's got a bit of work to do during the international break, and I don't mean that, fitness for players. Salah isn't going away. A few others are obviously going to be around, continuing to do rehabilitation. They need to get that right. There's the idea of Edwards and it looks like Hughes beginning to plan the next phase. There's work to be done on the new manager, because I presume whoever it is, we all know who we think it's going to be, but they've now got 2 weeks off, unless they currently haven't got a club. If you see what I mean, where if you're going to have some conversations, now is the time to have some conversations to begin that and move that along. But more than anything, Brighton just looms large. That day, that Easter Sunday, where we're playing at 2 and then those two play each other at 4:30, that is such a massive, massive day for Liverpool Football Club and the Jurgen Klopp era.
It's huge. It really is. And I think the club have got a job to do. I think the management have got a job to do in not letting the emotion get the better of us in this running, because we've seen it happen before. I think going out the FA Cup adds that a little bit, because it puts the pressure right on the league. I think the Europa League is obviously it's big. It's a nice side thing, but it's not the Champions League. So the level of opposition that you're playing is different.
And we like the draw.
Yeah, exactly.
It was mad that they let me do the Champions League draw, isn't it? You know, it's just great. Yeah. Are you free, Ako? Yeah. Can you sort this for us? Hot balls. I said, I'll look after you.
Exactly. So honestly, I think the biggest thing for us now is keeping cool heads going into this period, because it could be the greatest endings of all time. And you know, if anyone's going to romanticise things, it's going to be us, because that's what we do.
Absolutely.
but let's, you know, for the players, particularly sort of the younger players that are going to have to step up in these final 10 games, let's keep as cool as we can.
I think the staying calm, and you know, I've enjoyed this show because finding ways to laugh about it, I think it is as much as anything else sort of contextualises it a little bit. You know, it is not the end of the affair by any stretch of the imagination, Josh, and I think that that's really, really important. The point is, though, it was always the bigger game of the two anyway, but Brighton is on the horizon now, and Liverpool have got 10 games effectively to win a league. If Liverpool win all 10 games, I will not have anyone tell me that they won't be champions. If Liverpool win all 10 games, they will be champions, and they're all 10 games that Liverpool can win.
Well, it's the final stretch, isn't it? That's literally what it is. You know, we get to this international break. Feels like every season this is a big international break for, like, looking ahead and maybe getting, tying down a few summer signings or certainly planning that sort of thing. I think you're spot on about the manager. You know, this is, I'd be amazed if there's not, like, you know, a fair bit of communication out there during this international break.
It wouldn't surprise me if there's a couple of interviews genuinely done somewhere, that there's genuinely, if the two leading candidates are who we think they are, it wouldn't surprise me if they're doing two interviews.
Yeah, but this is the period to do it. But then on top of that, as you say, you know, going into the final stretch, City have an immediate game against Arsenal, and that could put Liverpool, I mean, if City win, which is probably what I'm expecting, and Liverpool hopefully win, or they draw, as in City and Arsenal draw, Liverpool go into the final nine with a lead.
Would you call it the big nine?
Probably would, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. But it is going to be a bit of a roller coaster. You know, there's going to be games where there's going to be more 90th minute winners, and there's going to be more games at Anfield where people on the cop are screaming to play quicker, and you need to chill and you need to relax.
Asking Gomez to shoot.
Yeah. Let's draw the line with that, please.
But it's going to be one of them, yeah, where hopefully Liverpool will showcase more experience in this period than an Arsenal, for example. And yeah, City are right there, you know, seasoned winners. So this is what you want to be in for them, isn't it? This is what we want.
It is. It's what we want. It is what we wanted more than anything. If I'd have offered you this before the ball was kicked this season, every single one of you would have said yes. That's the way in which it goes. How we've got here, especially today in the last 24 hours, that is another matter. But here we are. This is where we find ourselves. There's 10 league games to go. There is the possibility of five further European games for certain for this Liverpool side. They can do it. They can go all the way in both of those competitions. Sadly, the quadruple was never on, but then the quadruple never is. Thank you very much to Sam Walkerdine for doing the images, Andy Heaton for doing the audio. We've had Josh Williams, whose book's out very, very soon as well. You want to check that out. Sean O'Donnell and Jake Nolan. More on Josh's book to come. It's the Anfield Wrap this week, and if you go, and I'll see you in America. Sports Social Podcast Network.